American Timelines is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. For more information, go to queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
So now I'm obsessed with time. Come on, tell me about the time. Had it all in my head tonight. Had the time of my life.
Welcome to another episode of
American Timelines.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Joe, and together we are
History for Jerks. Okay, that
History
is...
History for Jerks, that's who we are, and we present American Timelines.
Yes, we do.
And we're part of the Queen City Podcast Network.
That's right.
Because we're here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
This is the podcast that brings you all your nostalgic and crazy memories.
Interesting, I think you said one time.
Yes, in pop culture history, year by year.
That's right.
And tonight, which year are we going to talk about?
Well, we've moved on to another year. What we've been doing is two episodes per year, so now we're in the third episode of our third season.
Yes.
We're moving on to the year 1971.
1971.
Right here in 1971 in Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's right. All right, so what happens first in 1971?
Well, as we enter the year 1971, you'll recall from the last episode that George Harrison was currently at the top of the
That's
charts
right.
with a song he stole
the melody from
yep. from the Chiffons. Is that what their name is?
Yeah, something like that.
He's so fine with my sweet Lord. And we surmised that he was put to death because of this.
No, you surmised that.
A, George Harrison's not alive. B, he plagiarized the song. So the
logical conclusion
is C, he was put to death for it.
Yeah.
He was guilty.
All right.
That's as far as my brain works. But then, as I do, I have a few things that don't really have dates, so I just throw those out at the beginning of the year before we jump into things.
Okay.
These are things that happened in 1971. Either they're gradual things that don't have a date, or they're just things that
you didn't find a date.
Or I couldn't find a date.
Yeah.
Ray Tomlinson invented internet-based email.
In 1971?
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about, in a previous episode in the 80s or 90s, we talked about Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the internet.
Yes.
But this is Ray Tomlinson. He invented internet-based email. He wrote a file transfer program called CPYNet.
Now, wait a minute. How can it be internet-based if the internet hasn't been invented yet?
He invented an internet-based email. He wrote a file transfer program called CPYNet to transfer files through the ARPANET, A-R-P-A-N-E-T.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked to change a program called Send Message, S-N-D-M-S-G, which sent messages to other users who were time-sharing computer. Right, to other users of a timeshare computer to run on 10X, T-E-N-E-X. He added code he took from CPYNet to SNDMSG.
This is awful.
So messages could be sent to other users on other computers, the first email. So people already messaged each other on the same computer that they were both using. This was the first time it was able to go from one computer to another computer.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. The first email he sent was a test.
Was it just people in the same house, probably?
It was in a workplace. It was like a computer lab, probably, somewhere.
Yeah.
The first email he sent was just a test. It was not preserved, so we don't have it anywhere. But Tomlinson describes it as something insignificant, like Q-W-E-R-T-U-I-O-P, like the first letters of the thing, QWERTYOPE.
Oh.
This is misquoted as the first email was QWERTYOPE. Anyway.
Okay.
Who cares?
Yep, that's dumb.
That's stupid. We wasted way too much time on
that. Yeah, that was really bad.
Cut that down.
Yep.
Stupid idiot. God, sometimes I'm writing things. I'm like, oh, this will be so great. We're
going to
have a whole podcast based on this, and then it's just dumb.
It's dumb garbage.
Also, in 1971, Barry Manilow wrote the State Farm jingle, Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm.
Barry Manilow wrote that?
Barry Manilow wrote that.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah. So you can see why I can't find a day like... I'm sure he didn't write down the date he wrote that song. But
right.
That's when that jingle came out.
Can you
Barry
just see
Manilow
him composing that at the piano? Like a good neighbor.
Well, it reminds me of those songs.
What's
those?
You could be all emotional about it.
Well, there's those insurance commercials now where they have like Leslie Odom Jr. from Hamilton and another star, and they sing like Nationwide is on your side.
Oh, they do.
And they like sing a song, and it's like they do these tear jerking like commercials where they show the kids growing up and families together, and all the time Nationwide's by your side, and they, it's like Leslie Odom Jr. just staring off into a window going, Nationwide is on your side. And it's just as equally dumb, so we haven't changed.
I guess not.
Barry Manilow.
Yep.
And also, in January 1971, there is no known written documentation of the food dish known as fajitas prior to 1971.
Oh.
Is that weird?
Yeah, that is weird.
Like somebody just...
Somebody made that up?
Yes, apparently. And they can't trace it down to who made it up or anything. So all they can tell us is...
That's not like a time-honored recipe from Mexico or anything?
All I can say is nobody can find any record of it before 1971, but they can't find like who invented it. Just that, I see fajitas mentioned in 1971. Nowhere else before that.
I love fajitas.
Fajitas might have just dropped out of the sky.
Were they always sizzling?
I think they were probably always sizzling fajitas. But I'm kind of the idea that, you know, there's a theory that...
They were real big in the 90s, fajitas.
They got big in the 90s?
Yeah, that was a big fad.
You know how there's the theory that aliens have come down to, like, advance our civilization? They're like, oh, gosh, these people aren't going faster. They have sex with different species to make them go faster.
They invented fajitas.
I think they brought fajitas down with them one time. We're like, oh, yeah, also have some fajitas. See you later.
Could be. I want some fajitas right now. That sounds good.
Why don't you make some while we'll make it as a cooking podcast?
I don't have any.
Okay, Amy's getting together her fajitas. She's at the stove. She's whipping up the ingredients. These are onionless fajitas.
I don't
fajitas.
Have any chicken either. So it would basically be green peppers.
That's a fajita.
Green peppers in a tortilla.
Okay, Amy's going to start her fajitas at the beginning of the podcast, and we'll check in at the end of the podcast to see how her fajitas are coming.
Fajitas.
And then you can hear me try her fajitas, so get started, and I'll move on to the next thing.
All right.
Based on an earlier cooker called the Beanery, the Crock-Pot sold its first of over 100 million in 1971.
And the only thing they made was baked beans.
The first crock pot. Everyone had baked beans from
then
on.
That's all they had.
Everyone's family reunion had, well, great, we got this fancy crock pot. Got some baked beans now. No excuse not to have green beans.
That's right.
Or some random casserole that your aunt brought.
I think that casseroles didn't come till later. I think when it was first invented, it was just pretty much a baked beans
receptacle. I'd say I remember corn casserole from the beginning. So it was some kind of random weird corn casserole that my Aunt Kim made.
Yeah.
Boy, did she ruin my life.
Yeah, she...
Shout out to Aunt Kim. Kim Sandwich, y'all. She lives in Lucky, Ohio. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
All right.
She's probably tying one on right now, knowing her. Anyway, there is also... So that was it for the things that didn't have dates.
All
right. So we're going to jump right to Saturday, January 2nd, 1971. Tay Diggs was born.
So who cares?
Remember Tay Diggs? Remember who that is?
Some actor.
It's his birthday. Yeah, it's
who
his birthday.
Cares?
And then on Monday, January 11th, 1971, Mary J. Blige was born.
You're not starting this shit where this we're talking about all the celebrities birthdays. That were born. No.
Well, now we got all these people that are famous.
No, this is we're not birthday. Doing that. We are not doing
we
that.
We might be doing that.
That is not something we're going to do.
I might do it.
No.
Tuesday, January 12th, 1971, the series premiere of Meet the Bunkers.
Like Archie Bunker family?
Yeah, Mike and Gloria plan a surprise party to celebrate Archie and Edith's 22nd anniversary, but quickly turns into a shouting match between conservative Archie and the liberal meathead on virtually every topic. That was the first episode of Meet the Bunkers.
So that was something that came before All in the Family, obviously.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, it was the... The episode was titled Meet the Bunkers, but it's All in the Family. I omitted that little piece of
information.
I was like, wasn't Meet the Bunkers? Is that a spinoff? No. So Meet the Bunkers was the name of the pilot episode of All in the Family. Sorry. So that's when they,
Now I'm on the same page.
Yeah, I'm a little stupid.
That was misleading.
So how about if I just, let's record an intro to that. the pilot episode, but then it won't make sense why you don't get it. So I'll just leave it the way it is.
Yeah,
that's
just
fine.
Leave it the way it is.
Yep. So All in the Family started 1971.
All right.
And you know that was a spinoff of MASH.
No, it was not. All in the Family was a great show.
Was it a spinoff of anything?
No. It was an original.
I thought Carol O'Connor played a cop in something earlier.
I think he played a cop in The Heat of the Night.
Mm.
In the movie.
So it is a spinoff.
No, he wasn't a cop in All in the Family.
I think from now on, I'm just going to pretend I think every show with the same
actor. With Carol O'Connor in it?
No. Yeah, him. But any show with anyone in it is a spinoff of whatever they were in before.
Yeah, you should.
And I'm going to insist it until
in
everyone.
Conversation.
Until everyone gets aggravated.
Yep, no one even want to talk.
And I'm going to do that. My plan is to do that until I have no friends at all. And I'm completely alienated from my
family. Well, mission already accomplished there, so.
Well, and no family. To my family.
Oh, we're going to leave you.
Yeah. And then we have the cost of a Super Bowl ad, January 17th, 1971, Super Bowl V.
I don't know. Was it? What was it last time?
It was lower than $72,000.
Okay, it was 60 something. Yeah. And so this one's probably $72,000.
Yeah, $72,000. That's right, because I told you. I mean, you're a terrible guesser. But this Super Bowl was between the Baltimore Colts and the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts defeated the Cowboys 16-13.
Good for them.
It was played in the Orange Bowl. Why is that good for them?
I don't know. Oh. Who cares?
It was played in the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. This was the first Super Bowl game played on artificial turf.
Oh.
It was on first-generation polyturf.
You know, my grandma had artificial turf in her, like, she had a screened-in porch.
Yeah.
And it had artificial turf on it.
Yeah, that was a
was
common
it a 70s thing.
Thing? Yeah, there's other people that, I've been to places like that.
The screened-in porch has artificial turf
on your dad's side, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, actually, I think I probably remember it from there.
You
but we had a pontoon boat.
You went there?
Yeah, I think I went there. Yeah. And we had a pontoon boat up north, my grandparents' cottage, that had that artificial turf. Was like their.
It's so weird.
I don't think it was actually artificial turf, but it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
As the carpet on the pontoon boat.
Yeah.
It was probably cheap.
It was probably cheap, and it was like, well, we're not inside, and we're not really outside. We're kind of in between, so we need some flooring that's kind of maybe not inside and maybe not all outside either.
Did your grandmother ever get turf toe?
She did. She walked around with it all the time from that porch.
Poor lady. So she had turf toe. She's out 3 weeks.
She was.
Yeah, she's going to have to go on IR. Was she ever on the PUP list?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Physically unable to perform list?
She never was.
No, she always knew how to perform.
All right, stop it. That's
you know
gross.
What I mean? What? No, I mean,
like grandma.
I mean perform musically and piano. She played the piano. Like my grandma played the organ. We talked about that.
That's right.
You want to guess who did the national anthem? Here's a hint.
Okay.
It wasn't sung.
Oh.
It was trumpeted.
Jeez.
Good luck.
No, I will not. I'm not even going to guess.
You can't guess a 1971 trumpeter?
Yeah, I won't know.
Tommy Loy, duh.
I don't know who Tommy Loy is.
I also don't know who Tommy Loy is.
How'd you know his trumpet?
Because it says National Anthem, Tommy Loy, trumpeter.
Oh.
In parentheses.
So, obviously.
And the MVP was the linebacker from Dallas Cowboys. It was, honey?
Yeah, right.
Chuck Howley, duh. You always call yourself a Dallas Cowboys linebacker historian.
Oh, yeah, Troy Aikman.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
He's a quarterback. He probably was born in 1971.
I know, but hey, I knew what team he played on.
That's more than I would have ever guessed.
So, boom.
Boom
on you, honey.
You are a sports genius.
I'm a sports nut.
You should become a bookie.
I'm a sports nut and balls.
I like to make some bets. And then Tuesday, January 19th, 1971, Sean Wayans was born.
Stop that.
And then Sunday,
not doing that.
Sunday, January 23rd, 1971. You can't stop me is the thing.
Yes, this is the worst thing ever.
No, it's great. Just wait till you hear this great celebrities we get to talk about in 1971. January 23rd, 1971 was a Sunday, and guess what new song took over the Billboard charts, baby?
What was it?
Not telling.
You've got to give us a hint.
Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Tony Orlando and Dawn. That's right. I don't remember what they sing.
You are familiar with that group or that band?
I've heard of him. Heard of Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Not three times.
On the ceiling if you want me. Yep, that's a good one.
Rum some dum on the furnace if you want to fuck.
That's right.
That's what it's about. That's basically good, it's like, hey, upstairs neighbor, do you want to bang?
Yep.
Which
I like that song.
I played it for the kids to try to see if they would like it.
Yeah.
And they asked me what do they mean? Why are they knocking? So I had to.
Kids always listen to words and songs.
I know. So I had I know this is awkward. I'm telling you this on the podcast, but I've had to kind of fast forward their sex education training. So I told them basically it's about fucking.
No, you did not.
And then I told them that how sex works.
No, you did.
Both of them. I explained it. I showed them a couple Ron Jeremy videos to just.
All right.
No, I didn't do that.
You're just gross.
I just said they wanted a kiss and smooch. And they believed me.
Well, it worked.
This song was, it sold more than 100,000 records a day in New York City for 10 straight days.
They were crazy for that thing.
Yeah, I think because it's about an apartment dwelling, and New York is very apartment-y.
That's right.
Let's see. The song was covered by Billy Crash Craddock in 1971 and became a number 3 country hit. Manny De Leon of the Philippines sold out in the market when he made his version under Alpha Records, and Dolly Parton performed the song on a 1976 episode of her variety series, Dolly.
Hey, hey.
Did you know that was a thing?
No.
And several Larry Craig-themed parodies, all titled Tap Three Times, were recorded by various artists.
Oh, sweet.
Such as Paul and Storm and the Capitol Steps in 2007, following the Senator's sex scandal, in which he was arrested for tapping his foot to allegedly alert someone to have sex in a public airport restroom. Remember that Larry Craig thing?
Yes.
Tap
I loved
three it. Three times in the bathroom if you want a glory hole. Yeah. And then Saturday, February 13th, 1971, that was no longer already. It was gone off the top of the charts. And we have a new one, The Osmonds.
Okay.
You know any of the Osmond hits?
I don't.
This one I've listened to several times, and I swear it sounds like Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Donny
Osmond sounded just like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Yeah. So he must have been real little.
He was.
Because that was the trend in the 70s is have children sing about having sex with women.
Yeah, it's what we established last time.
Yeah. So One Bad Apple.
I don't know that
one. One bad apple spoiled the whole bunch, girl.
I can't ever tell what a song is from you singing.
One bad apple spoils the whole bunch, girl.
You've been listening to that a lot?
I've listened a couple times. But it's also used as the theme to the Osmond Show on ABC. And according to Donny Osmond, Michael Jackson later told him that the Jackson 5 almost recorded that song first, but they chose to record ABC instead.
Oh, and ABC was a much bigger hit.
Obviously, ABC has stood the test of time, and that song is really stupid.
Yeah.
It sounds like it sounds kind of just like ABC, but it's saying a stupid saying about one bad apple spoils the whole bunch.
Yeah.
ABC. Easy. It's kind of, I don't know, whatever. And then Wednesday, February 17th, 1971, Denise Richards is born. And then Thursday, February 25th, 1971, Sean Astin is born.
Stop that. That is ruining the whole podcast.
Just one more. Tuesday, March 2nd, 1971, Method Man was born.
Stop doing it. You're going to ruin the entire podcast.
No, I'm not going to ruin anything. It's going to be the best. Sometimes you got to branch out.
God damn it.
Remember when I...
Why do you got to find always something really super annoying to do?
Because that's what I do, baby.
God, how do I not know this by now?
This is our marriage.
I know it is.
It's been 20 years of bliss. Of you hating birthdays and hating Phil Collins and me loving life.
All right.
I just love life and you hate everything. That's just...
No, I just hate stupid things.
Except birthdays. You hate birthdays? Birthdays are stupid now. Hey, everyone. All listeners that like having a birthday. If you like having a birthday party... Please stop listening to our podcast.
All right,
if you like
up.
Birthdays, if you've ever celebrated a birthday, you're no longer allowed to listen, according to Amy. Now, I would like to welcome you to the podcast.
All right, this is dumb.
Because birthdays are great. Emmanuel Lewis was born Tuesday, March 9th. Okay. Now, before that, the Monday, March 8th, 1971. Listen to this.
All right.
I can't believe this happened.
Okay.
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know what a big deal he was?
Like,
he was still a big deal. He was a big deal.
He married Mia Farrow.
He was in 71.
I don't know about in 71.
Yeah, but I mean, superstar, right?
Yeah.
He could not get a ringside ticket to Ali and Frazier's Fight of the Century.
You're kidding.
Which was on this day, whatever day I said. But he managed to get a press pass to shoot photos for Life magazine.
He did that?
Frank Sinatra did, yeah. It's the weirdest thing
that
ever.
Is weird. Like, why,
does he even know how to take pictures, or does he have a camera? But anyway, Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier, billed as the fight of the century, also known as The Fight, was the boxing match between WBC, WBA heavyweight champion Joe Frazier, who was 26-0 with 23 knockouts.
Wow.
And the ring lineal heavyweight champion Muhammad Ali, who was 31-0 with 25 KOs.
God, I love Muhammad Ali.
Imagine that match. Neither one of them lost. It was held on Monday, March 8th, 1971.
Did you ever see that When We Were Kings movie?
Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
It was good. This was held on March 8th, 1971 at Madison Square Garden in New York City. It was the first time that two undefeated boxers fought each other for the heavyweight title.
Mm-hmm.
Frazier won in 15 rounds.
Oh, he did?
By a unanimous decision. It was the first of a trilogy of fights followed by rematch fights. And Muhammad Ali both won the other two. The Thrilla in Manila.
The
Manila
and the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yeah. Super Fight 2 was the other one, I guess.
Yeah.
But he won both the other ones. But, I wasn't aware that, for some reason, I thought Muhammad Ali beat Joe Frazier in all of them.
Yeah, but, I thought. He didn't fight Joe Frazier in all of them.
Right. But, every time he fought Joe Frazier, I thought he beat him.
He beat him,
but,
yeah.
I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I didn't.
And I'm now not, you apologize?
I'd like to take this moment to apologize to Muhammad Ali's family, Tatiana Ali. From
you would be apologizing to Joe Frazier's family because you're saying that he didn't win.
Oh gosh, yeah, Smoking Joe Frazier's family. That would be
okay.
Frazier from Kelsey Grammer.
All right.
Frazier, that's the only Frazier I can
think
of.
What's next?
Jeez, somebody's in a bad mood today just because Frank Sinatra couldn't get into a boxing match.
That's right.
Well, she's mad. Jeez. What a woman am I married to? Okay, so I'll skip past Manuel Lewis's birthday and John Hamm's birthday. You thought it's March 10th, Steve Bishop's
birthday.
Don't
mention them.
And I'll skip past Johnny Knoxville's birthday, I guess. So. Sunday, March 20th, 1971, Janis Joplin came back to life. She was resurrected. They created zombie Janis Joplin, and she put out a song called Me and Bobby McGee.
Yes, that's a great one.
Actually, it took over the Billboard chart. She was still dead.
Yeah,
but,
I know she was dead.
It didn't make the top. And do you know who wrote this song?
No.
Me and Bobby McGee?
Nope.
Do you know that Janis Joplin was like the third or fourth person to record it, and she was the first female that recorded it?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Kris Kristofferson wrote that song.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He co-wrote it with Fred Foster.
Okay.
But it was originally performed by Roger Miller. Other recordings of the song include Waylon Jennings, Grateful Dead, Kris Kristofferson himself, Kenny Rogers, and Gordon Lightfoot and Miranda Lambert.
Gordon Lightfoot. Can you imagine that version?
Yeah.
Jeez. Talk about cheese.
The only song I ever hear when I think of Gordon Lightfoot is the Edna Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
And I was in a play once about the Edmund Fitzgerald sinking, and Gordon Lightfoot wouldn't let us have the song for the play.
Oh, what an asshole. What's the point of writing a song about the Edmund Fitzgerald if you don't let people listen to it?
Yeah, he didn't want us to have the rights to it, I guess, for some reason.
It's weird that you'd have to ask him that you couldn't just... I know it's... copyright law and all that.
Yeah, now probably that's what it got down to me, an actor on the show. It probably was the company, whoever the copyright company wouldn't give us the rights, probably.
Yeah, right.
So you probably got trickled down to me. Yeah, Gordon Lightfoot's an asshole. He wouldn't let us do it. But maybe it really was that somebody said maybe he wouldn't sign over rights, or I don't know. Who knows what it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just the word that got to me as a stupid actor in college.
Yep.
So Janis Joplin.
Yes.
Our kids didn't like that song either.
Oh, they didn't?
Henry kind of did, but Audrey thought she sounded terrible.
Well, Audrey's and, no taste.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to, she likes a lot of pop music, but I was trying to explain to her, like, this was revolutionary for a woman to rock out like this.
Yep.
And then I explained all the drugs she did and how she choked on her own vomit.
You did not.
No, I didn't do that. But
she didn't choke on her own vomit.
That's right. We found out that she did not.
But see, you did it just like I was saying.
She slept in her vomit.
Think that they...
Yeah, it's more fun to say people choked on their own vomit.
That's what I think it is.
Elvis died on a toilet.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll skip past...
Ma Cass died choking on a ham sandwich.
Is that what people say?
Yeah.
Is it true?
No.
Oh. Saturday, March 27th, 1971, Eric Clapton dedicated Layla to the model Patty Boyd, the wife of his good friend
George Harrison.
George Harrison of the Beatles.
Yep, I knew that.
Patty Boyd first refused Eric Clapton, but then later fell apart from George Harrison as George...
George Harrison was not as a good-looking man.
Because George Harrison was having an affair with the wife of Ringo Starr.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, Eric Clapton married this woman later on.
And then their son died.
That was their son?
I think.
Tears in heaven. That was a tragic, sad thing. Yeah, I don't even like to...
I can't even listen to that song.
Yeah, I can't think about that. But should we try to make some jokes about it?
Or just, no, I think we just
probably
keep
not
going.
Make jokes, because it's hard to... do that. Tuesday, March 30th, 1971, the first Starbucks opened at the Pike Palace Market in Seattle, Washington. When the now infamous chain first...
That's long ago?
When the now infamous chain, first opened its doors in Seattle on March 30th, the sign bore not a green mermaid, but a more anatomically detailed brown one, and its mission was purely to sell freshly roasted coffee beans.
Oh, so she boobs out.
That's what I'm guessing. I'm thinking boobs and maybe a giant vagina.
Like a gaping one. That's what it sounds like.
A gaping, like maybe it was covered in vaginas.
That's all it was vagina.
It was just a giant vagina store.
Vagina mermaid.
It was like a giant, you had to walk into a vagina to go into the store probably.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and we figure things out together pretty well.
That's true.
And then... The day after Ewan McGregor's birthday, the day after Ewan McGregor was born, Thursday, April 1st, 1971, Carolyn Davidson, the creator of the Nike swoosh symbol, she was paid only $35 for that design.
Oh, that's highway robbery.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yes.
I looked up a bunch of stuff about that, and it was really just boiled down to a bunch of boring meetings and... marketing meetings and designs and plans.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
who cares?
Yeah, I finally figured out, like, something was going to be boring before reading it all.
Yeah.
And then deciding it'll be boring and then cutting it.
Good.
So there you go. So you be proud of me, babe.
I am proud.
Saturday, April 3rd, 1971. The Temptations are now at the top of the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
You know what song? I don't know how you would know which one came.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just my imagination.
Running away with me. That's a good song.
Yeah, that is a good song.
Just my imagination. Running away with me.
The kids, we're listening to this in the car. You know, I was playing these songs for them as I was dropping them off. And they both argued with me. And they said, this is not a man singing this. This is a woman's voice.
Oh.
And I said, see, he just said, I'm lucky to have this guy. And I said, no, he's saying he's a lucky guy to have found her.
Yeah.
So I played it like three times. They're like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Finally, I had to pull over, look it up on YouTube, and show them the men singing it. And they're like, oh, my God, it just sounded like such like a woman singing
they're
it.
They're so stubborn.
Yeah, they just, they get that from you.
No.
I think we've established over two and a half seasons here.
No.
That you
refuse
to admit you're ever wrong about anything.
I don't know what you're
talking about. And even when I prove you wrong and then I demand an apology, I don't get one. So they're your children.
What you're talking about.
That's it. I want a divorce. No, I don't. I love you. I love this abuse. I need it. Anyway, there are some things about that song that the guy who wrote that, one of the lead singers was fighting with the Temptations and I don't know. They were not on speaking terms or arguing about something. And that song, I think, brought them together. By the time that came out, they weren't on speaking terms anymore or something. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. But
that's a great story.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I guess I could read it. You want me to read it? The song was recorded in the midst of a bitter feud between Eddie Kendricks and the Temptations' de facto leader, Otis Williams. Dissatisfied and frustrated with Williams' leadership, Kendricks began to withdraw from the group and picked several fights with either Williams or his best friend, bass singer Melvin Franklin. When Kendricks told his friend, ex-Temptation David Ruffin, about his problems in the group, Ruffin convinced Kendricks that he should begin a solo career. After a final altercation during a November 1970 Copacabana engagement, both Kendricks and Williams agreed that it would be best for Kendricks to leave the group. They got in each other's faces, and they got their wiener stuck in a Chinese finger trap.
No, that didn't happen.
And by the time Just My Imagination was recorded, Williams and Kendricks were no longer on friendly speaking terms. Nevertheless, Williams was impressed by Kendricks' performance on the recording, and in his 1988 Temptations biography, referred to Just My Imagination as Eddie's finest moment.
Oh, so.
There, was that worth bringing up?
Yeah, well, that was maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. And April 12th, Shannon Doherty was born. And then Shannon Doherty. It's Shannon Doherty, your favorite. It's your favorite actress. And Thursday, April 15th, 1971, were the Academy Awards.
Oh.
This is your favorite, the Academy Awards. The 43rd Academy Awards ceremony presented by the Academy of Motion Pictures was held on April 15th, and it took place at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Have you ever been to that?
No.
The awards presentation hosting duties were handled by 34 friends of Oscar.
34?
And broadcast by NBC for the first time in 11 years. Yeah.
34 hosts.
Yeah, and they named them all. They're all just former Oscar winners and stuff, so I didn't bother writing
no,
that
I wouldn't.
Down. But this was the ceremony that George C. Scott became the first actor to reject an Oscar.
Yeah.
Which we talked about in last episode when we talked about Patton.
Mm-hmm.
Because
he said
the awards are a 2-hour meat parade, a public display with contrived suspense for economic reasons, which he's not wrong.
That's true.
With her best supporting actress win, Helen Hayes became the first performer to win Oscars in both lead and supporting categories.
Oh, she did?
Yep.
What movies for?
She won Best Actress 38 years earlier for The Sin of Madeline Claudel. And she also
I thought you meant she won them in the same year.
No. She became the first one to win one in each category in different years.
Oh.
She also has a record of having the biggest gap between acting wins. The documentary film Woodstock garnered 3 Oscar nominations, making it the most nominated documentary film in Oscar history. April 17th, 1971, Three Dog Night takes over the Billboard charts with
Joy to the World.
Boys and girls.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Joe, do the fish. Yeah, last episode I realized I called it Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog, which is a common thing.
Yeah,
people
it's not
mistake
right.
It. I mean, I knew it was called Joy to the World, but. And my little trivia about this is that originally the first words weren't Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. They were Jeremiah Was a Prophet.
Oh.
And everybody hated it. So.
Okay.
They changed it.
So they changed it to He's a Bullfrog.
Yep. And Hoyt Axton is the one who sings on that song. And he and his mother, Mae Axton, became the first mother and son to each have written a number one pop single in the rock era.
Oh.
Because Mae Axton wrote Heartbreak Hotel.
Oh, really?
Which was the first number one hit for?
Elvis.
Elvis Presley.
That's right.
Yeah. Good job. Not Elvis Costello.
So. No.
Yeah. How about that for trivia for you?
There you go.
Excited about that one?
That's awesome.
And I accept your apology. And then Thursday, April 22nd, 1971, Charles Manson, who did not audition for the Monkees, and 3 of his followers were convicted of killing Sharon Tate and 6 others in 1969.
That whole big fiasco wrapped up.
Yep, that whole big fiasco, 71. which we will have covered in season 4.
That's right.
At the end of season 4, we're probably going to cover that, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, because you can't not do Charles Manson.
Charles Manson, that's right.
Yeah, we'll at least talk about it in the future.
In the future, which is really the past.
2000. Yeah, see, that's messed up. Yeah.
Future, but it's really the past.
It's the future, but it's the past. Because American timelines is crazy.
It is.
You're in a time warp, really. I mean, if you're listening to this, it's messed up, man. Because it's the future, it's the past. What is it? We don't know. No one will ever know. Years from now, aliens will come to Earth looking for water, and they're going to discover American timelines recordings somehow.
Maybe.
Anyway, Sunday, May 1st, or Saturday, May 1st, 1971. Of course, May 1st wasn't a Sunday, you idiot. The heavy metal sign of the horns hand gesture was born.
Oh, really?
On May 1st, 1971. It is credited to the 60s band Coven.
Coven.
That's from Coven. What's that movie?
American. It's Coven. American something.
Well, in my movie, it's called Coven.
American movie.
It's Coven. American movie. Coven, yeah. Which is best known
for. You made that mistake. That's funny.
I just did because of that movie. Probably. Yeah. Anyway, the 60s band Coven, who is best known for the hit One Tin Soldier from the movie Billy Jack.
Oh, we saw the trailer for Billy Jack. Yes,
so we did this again. We watched all the trailers for the movies of 1971, and again, we cannot reinforce more strongly enough how terrible movies were then. Like how
different the trailers were.
Oh, yeah, and how great movies have gotten. Like editing has gotten so much better.
It's so bad.
You didn't think you take editing for granted and effects and.
And the trailers especially were badly edited.
Yeah, they're bad. Just like everything is just... And car crashes and car chases were terrible then. Like everything was so crappy.
And like we watched the entire trailer for Billy Jack and we have no idea what that movie is about.
That's the whole thing.
He's like a karate chopping cowboy. That was the only thing I got.
It seems like it's a lot like... It's probably like the Bourne Identity or the Bourne movies or the... Whatever the Tom Cruise movies are. Like it's a series of movies with the same action hero, but... But you can't tell what the hell he's even doing.
You can't tell what is going on in that movie from the trailer.
It's like they took the best scenes and just spliced them together without trying to make a trailer that tells a story. Mm-hmm. It's just like, these are the best acting moments, maybe.
Yeah, it was just...
But completely out of context that don't make any sense.
Kicking people in the head.
Yeah, he kicks a guy in the face at the beginning. That's pretty funny. But yeah... It's really bad. It's really kitschy. The '70s were terrible.
And it had a couple sequels we saw. So
yeah, we looked at there was one in 1974 and whatever. So there's that.
Okay.
It's really weird. Movies back in the '70s. So people in the '70s had no idea that they had it so bad.
Right. They thought it was wonderful.
That same day, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was born.
No.
He wasn't born in the '70s. He was born. When Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was born, Ferdinand Louis Alcindor Jr. Wait, hold on. Let me say this again. Saturday, that same day, May 1st, 1971, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was born Ferdinand Louis Alcindor, Lou Alcindor, they called him Jr. Mm-hmm. He changed his name when he converted to Islam.
On that day?
On May 1st, 1971. Okay. He was 24, and he...
He was already famous, right?
Yeah, he was a famous basketball player.
But he was known as Lou Alcindor?
Lou Alcindor was his name, and he converted to Islam and became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which means the noble one, servant of the Almighty.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's what the name means. So you know that. Yeah, so how about that?
How about that?
I remember being little and getting Cassius Clay and Lou Alcindor mixed up. Because I didn't know which one was Muhammad Ali and which one was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But I knew they both, I understood the concept that they both changed names.
Yeah.
But when I would hear Lou Alcindor, I would think Muhammad Ali. And when I would think Cassius Clay, I would think Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar. When you were little or when you were like in high school and stuff?
No, when I was little. When I was in high school, I knew by then.
Because when you're little, why would you know?
In the 70s. Well, because people talked about it all the time, those guys. I mean, they were huge in the 70s and...
That's true, I guess.
Early 80s and stuff, so... Yeah, so when I was little.
Okay.
Friday, May 14th, 1971, Metallica owns the rights to the 1971 anti-war film Johnny Got His Gun. And this is the date it came out.
Okay.
It was cheaper than paying royalties for Metallica every time the music video for their song One, which uses clips from the film, played. So they just bought the rights to the movie.
Oh, okay.
So apparently that... Video has that movie in it.
The video has the movie in it.
His clips from that movie, Johnny Got His Gun.
Okay.
Do you know what that is?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I do not.
And then Tuesday, May 18th, 1971, Gordie Howe, originally retired from the NHL in 1971. On Tuesday, May 18th, 1971, Gordie Howe retired.
Okay.
From the NHL. But he actually unretired 2 years later in 1973 when he was in his mid-40s because he wanted to play with his sons, Mark and Marty. He played for 7 more seasons before retiring at 52.
Oh, wow. He played till he was 52?
Yeah. He probably didn't play very good.
No, but, I wouldn't think so.
But he played with his sons.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's something.
I guess. Yeah. Do you know Gordie Howe?
No.
Me neither. I don't care about hockey.
Mm-mm.
And then Thursday, May 27, 1971, Lisa Left Eye Lopez was born.
Stop with it.
Friday, May 28, 1971, airplane celebrity death.
Oh.
Were you going to cover this one?
No.
No, did you end up not? We're going to talk about it, but.
Yeah.
All right, I will. Audie Murphy died in an airplane.
Audie Murphy.
On May 28, 1971. You know who he is?
No.
He was killed when the private plane in which he was a passenger crashed into Brush Mountain near Catawba, Virginia, 20 miles west of Roanoke, in conditions of rain, clouds, fog, and zero visibility. The pilot and 4 other passengers were also killed. Audie Leon Murphy was the most decorated American combat soldiers, was one of the most decorated American combat soldiers of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He received military combat. He received every military combat award for valor available from the U.S. Army, as well as the French and Belgian awards for heroism.
Okay.
And he also, after the war, he embarked on a 21-year acting career. He played himself in the 1955 autobiographical film To Hell and Back,
mm-hmm.
based on his 1949 memoirs of the same name, but most of his roles were in westerns. He made guest appearances on celebrity television shows and starred in the series Whispering Smith.
Mm.
Murphy was a fairly accomplished songwriter. He bred quarter horses in California and Arizona and became a regular participant in horse racing. So, and also suffering from PTSD, he slept with a loaded handgun under his pillow every night.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And he was addicted to sleeping pills.
Okay.
And he died in a plane crash.
Wow, so that's quite a life.
Audie Murphy, yeah,
that I've never heard of.
I've never heard of him either. I thought maybe it was somebody you knew, and you're like, oh yeah, of course, Audie Murphy, you idiot. But nope,
not me.
Well, that's who he is. So listeners,
that's not who I am.
Some of our biggest fans might be like huge Audie Murphy fans, and they might be upset that we don't know him. But sorry guys. Saturday, May 29th, 1971, the Rolling Stones have a single that takes the number one spot in the Billboard charts.
Oh, which one?
Brown Sugar.
Oh, how come you dance so good, honey? That's a good one.
Yeah, and there's a video for this where Mick Jagger is wearing a pink suit, I believe, and he's wearing a red... he's wearing a beanie,
mm-hmm.
a multicolored beanie, like a kid's mm-hmm. beanie that would have like a helicopter
on
it, but it doesn't have the helicopter on it. It's like,
that's weird.
It's like blue, yellow, and red. It's like a child's beanie he's wearing on his head for just a second. Then he takes it off.
Whose idea was that? That's bizarre.
Yeah. Mick Jagger's crazy.
Yep.
He was crazy doing that. The Mick Jagger dance, the signature moves.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep. His crazy.
The signature Mick Jagger moves.
Yep.
The song was written by Jagger with Marcia Hunt in mind. Hunt was Jagger's secret girlfriend and mother of his first child, Karis.
I wonder why she was a secret girlfriend.
I don't know.
Was he married?
Maybe he was married. I don't know if she was African American.
Mm-hmm.
Brown Sugar. You know,
yeah.
It's also claimed it was written with Claudia Lanier in mind. Lanier made this claim on BBC's Radio 4 in 2014, I guess, saying that it was written with her in mind because at the time mm-hmm. when it was written, Mick Jagger used to hang around with her. But Mick Jagger said, no, it was about Marcia Hunt. Yep. So there you go.
Okay.
Oh, here's the thing, though. It was written, he wrote it, sometime during the filming of Ned Kelly in 1969. Do you know what that movie is?
No,
Ned Kelly?
Never heard of that.
It's a movie starring Mick Jagger.
Oh, I didn't know there was that existed.
I didn't know he acted at all.
No,
did you?
No.
It's a British movie, so I watched a little clip of it, and he's real young. Young looking. So it's really weird to see him acting and talking to people. And, you know, I don't know. It's real thick British accent. So I'd like to watch that sometime, see if it's any good.
You would? You'd watch it?
I mean, I was just fascinated by seeing him interact and talk. Because, you know, you only hear him sing, really.
That's true.
He's such a iconic person. He's so odd looking.
Flamboyant.
Yeah,
flamboyant. Odd like, looking,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, so different. But he looks real young in this, and he's an army soldier guy, you know.
Huh.
Ned Kelly. So, yeah. So there you go. How about that? And then Saturday, June 5th, 1971, Mark Wahlberg was born. And then Tuesday, June 8th, 1971, organic advocate Jerome Rodale. R-O-D-A-L-E. Would you say Rodale? Rodale.
Rodale. I guess.
Organic advocate Jerome Rodale in 1971.
I said I'd say Rodale, I guess, and then you.
And
just
then I just said Rodale. Rodale. Organic advocate Jerome Rodale made an appearance on the Dick Cavett Show, where he was interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a big health nut. So throughout the interview, Rodale constantly bragged about his health, stating that he was going to live to be 100. During the interview, he had a heart attack and died.
On TV?
It was a taping, so they never aired it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he died of a heart attack at the age of 72.
While he was bragging about living to be 100?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's funny.
So he after he did his interview, he was still on stage and was seated on a couch next to the active interviewee, New York Post columnist Pete Hamill, and he had stated... so he was sitting there next to him, and then Hamill noticed something was wrong with Rodale and leaned over to Cavett and said, "This looks bad." And then, according to other people, Dick Cavett saw him and said, "Are we boring you, Mr. Rodale?"
Oh, no.
And then thought he was falling asleep.
We had a Bernie's over here.
Yeah. And Dick Cavett says he doesn't remember saying that. But so anyway, they had doctors and stuff in the audience trying to bring him back.
Funny.
And he died. So that's a cool thing. That'd be cool if there's footage of that. I like watching people die non-violently. I know you prefer watching people get brutally murdered and raped.
I didn't say I enjoy watching any of that.
You can infer. I mean, if you've listened to 28 episodes of our show, you know, you love watching murders and rapes. I prefer to watch old men die of old age in person.
Ridiculous.
I like to watch their lifeless bodies slink to the ground.
Slink down on a stage.
Yeah,
on a stage. of some sort.
Yep. Wednesday, June 16th, 1971, Tupac Shakur was born. Friday, June 18th, 1971, America's war on drugs officially began.
And that was the downward spiral of the law and order.
War on drugs, yeah.
Law and order.
Amplified everything on drugs. So did you know that 1 gram of cocaine costs $200 then?
Oh, really?
Today, that same gram of cocaine costs $50.
Oh, wow.
How about that? A lot cheaper.
Well, it's because they cut it probably with all kinds of stuff.
I have no idea.
I mean, they want everybody to get addicted to it, so they make it as cheap as possible, I would think.
You think?
I think.
Well, that's crack is cheaper cocaine,
cheap.
They mix cocaine with other stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Then Saturday, June 19th, Carole Kane takes over the... Carole King, sorry.
I was going to say, Kane. Who's Carole Kane?
Carole Kane is... isn't she the actress from... she played Latka's wife on Taxi. Isn't that Carole Kane?
I don't know.
Something Kane. I don't know. Carole King.
Is it, I feel the earth move under my feet.
Partially. It's that one plus another one. So this is a double A-side. Oh. Instead of an A-side and a B-side, it's two number ones.
Oh.
And they both made it to the number one. And I looked... To talk about this A and B side, I don't know if we mentioned that before. I looked up more because I really got confused as I'm seeing these Billboard charts that it has both listed, the A and B, a lot of times. And so I really looked up, it's like, were they both considered on the thing? And so apparently, for a short time, from like 70 to 73 or something like that, or 70, 72, just a couple years, they would automatically just put the B side up with the first one on airplay. Like, not necessarily play it, but they'll just, it's billed as being a. one of the Hot 100s.
Oh, really?
Just for being on the other side. Later, they stopped doing that, and then, of course, they stopped having B-sides altogether. But
yeah.
This one is a rare one that both songs actually were, had heavy airplay. Because I don't know if you know how Billboard decides what the Hot 100s are, like what these number ones are.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of airplay and sales.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like there's another something that's in there. Like, but it's a combination of all that. It's some kind of formula. It's like the quarterback rating in football. You know how it's just a number, and it's based on their completions.
That.
And then, you know, you do know that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a combination of things to be popularity, airplay, sales, and I feel like something else.
Okay.
But anyway, so It's Too Late. And I feel the earth move for the other. It's too late. And surprisingly, It's Too Late was the more popular one of those two.
Oh, they're both good songs.
Yeah, they are really good songs. So I listened to both of these, and Carole King, I did not realize how many songs she really wrote and was
the
star of. So she wrote both of those, and now, Martika covered I Feel the Earth Move in 1989.
Martika,
your favorite.
Oh, jeez.
But, you know, funny story is radio stations pulled it before it could get great success because that was 1989 when that big earthquake in San Francisco.
Oh.
And I Feel the Earth Move, they felt like it was a bad thing with all the damage of the earthquake. So they just pulled it.
So they pulled it?
It came out, like, right at that time. So
what
bad luck for her.
Yeah.
But It's Too Late. Apparently... I lied. She didn't write both of those. Toni Stern wrote It's Too Late.
Mm-hmm.
And she told author Sheila Weller that she wrote the lyrics in one single day after her love affair with James Taylor ended.
Mm-hmm.
So, not Carole King, this other gal who was friends with them, she wrote this, and she was having an affair with James Taylor.
Oh, she was.
And I was looking at this. Did you know Carole King never married James Taylor? I thought they got married.
I never thought they were married.
You didn't? Well, I think they've supposedly had affairs, but
yeah,
and
they
I thought she wrote this song about James Taylor.
Yeah.
But no, Toni Stern wrote it. But Carole King wrote a million songs.
I think James Taylor was a wife abuser or a girlfriend abuser.
Was he?
I think.
Oh man.
I think I heard that.
I don't like that.
No.
He's a big hippie. How can he be?
I know, you'd think.
That's crazy. Anyway.
I think he went out with Carly Simon, too, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe he married her, right? Didn't she marry him? She married somebody famous. Gosh, I don't know. We'll look it up later.
Yeah.
But Carole King has been married four times to Jerry Goffin, Charles Largy, Rick Evers, and Rick Sorensen.
Okay.
And her third husband, Rick Evers, beat her up.
Oh.
And he died of a cocaine overdose days after they separated in 1978. Her children are musicians, and she's had a friendship with musician James Taylor, a frequent collaborator.
Oh, okay.
And she wrote one of his biggest hits, which he actually covered.
Okay.
I think it's in the same year, so we'll cover it. And then Tuesday, June 22nd, 1971, Mary Lynn Rackjub was born. She was Chloe from 24.
Come
Sorry,
on.
Sorry, okay, I won't do that.
Stop.
That's the last one. Okay, I won't do any more. Thursday, June 24th, 1971, Paul Revere and the Raiders take over the Billboard charts.
Oh, I can't remember what they sing.
Indian Reservation?
Is it Cherokee people?
Yeah, the whole Indian nation.
Cherokee tribe.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
You got the whole Indian nation.
Moved out. I think they sang something else, too, but I can't think of it.
Cherokee Nation. And this isn't the original song either. It was originally written before, and they kind of redid it.
Okay.
So Paul Revere and the Raiders. You didn't know them?
I feel like I've heard of them, but I couldn't attach a song to them.
Well, Revere owned several restaurants in Caldwell, Idaho, and he first met the singer of this band, Mark Lindsay, while picking up hamburger buns from the bakery where Lindsay worked. Boom.
Mm.
Who would have known? Greatness would come from that. You don't have anything on June, do you?
Mm-mm.
Wednesday, June 30th, 1971, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory came out. It was released, the movie.
Yeah.
It was funded by Quaker Oats in exchange for producing a tie-in candy bar, the Wonka Bar.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know
either. They came out with one. I love that movie, though. I wanted to go in that room.
You remember Charlie Bucket?
Yeah, that's the main. That's Charlie, the Chocolate Factory, Charlie.
Oh, well, Peter Ostrom, mm-hmm. who played Charlie Bucket,
yep.
has never acted in another film other than Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Oh. I thought Gene Wilder was in that.
No, Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka. Well, have you never seen that?
Who did you say Charlie Bucket is?
It's Charlie. Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. He's Charlie.
Oh, who's Charlie? The kid?
You've never He's seen Charlie in the Chocolate Factory?
Oh, I'm sure I have, but I never liked it much. It's more for girls. It's kind of a girl movie.
No, it's not. It's a great movie.
Well, for girls. Little girls like
Didn't
it.
Didn't you want to go in that room made of candy?
I'm not a big candy fan.
When you were a kid, I'm talking about.
Nah, really.
What's wrong with you? Oh, my Candy's God. I don't think I've ever met anybody that didn't love that movie.
I just, as a kid, I was more of a McNeil Lehrer Report fan.
You're just a loser.
Well, that's a very brutal thing to say to someone.
Well, I just can't get over
just
that.
Just because I enjoy the McNeil Lehrer Report.
No, it's because you didn't like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, well.
Actually, that movie's called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
So, I accept your apology.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the stupid one with Johnny Depp.
So how would I know that Charlie Bucket is Charlie then?
Well, because you called it Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Obviously, there's a character named Charlie in it.
Gosh, geez, somebody's really woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. Maybe we should just end the podcast.
No, I'm Jeez. Just saying. I'm
just brutally attacking me over.
I'm
over
just being real. I'm just
a chocolate
telling,
movie.
Telling what everybody's thinking is all.
Everybody, even Steve Brace?
Yep.
He's thinking that, too?
I bet.
Well, Steve Brace, I apologize, but only to Steve Brace.
Okay.
You want to know when Missy Elliott's birthday is, or just skip past that? Jim Morrison, who was pretty young for the official heart failure diagnosis he got.
Yeah.
Because some suggest it was a massive amount of drugs in the system, Morrison joined Pamela Cowerson in Paris in March 1971 at an apartment she had rented for him on the Rue Beautreillis.
No, I'm not
that's,
at
that's
all.
That's probably not right.
No.
In the 4th arrondissement of Paris on the right bank. In letters, he described going for long walks through the city alone. During this time, he shaved his beard and lost some of the weight he had gained in the previous months. He died on July 3rd, 1971 at age 27.
Wow. In the bathtub.
Do you remember who else died at age 27?
Two
people we talked about last
Jimmy
episode.
Jimmy and Janice.
Both age 27.
Wow.
Jim
That's
Morrison
crazy.
Died at 27.
That's nuts.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
Oh, you think somebody killed them all?
They were murdered. They all three were murdered. And there's
they
a YouTube
died
video
of drugs.
About it. Yeah, drugs. I'm doing the quotes, the fake quotes when it's not really drugs. None of them ever even touched a drop of alcohol or any drugs, ever. They're both clean and sober, and they were killed. It was a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
He was found by Coerson in a bathtub at his apartment. See? Bathtub.
Yep.
Anyway, choking on vomit, toilets, Elvis. The official cause of his death was listed as heart failure. Although no autopsy was performed, as it was not required by French law, his death was 2 years to the day after the death of Rolling Stones guitarist Brian Jones, and approximately 9 months after the deaths of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. Yep. And I read something about, you know, his grave in France there. It just keeps getting, like, it's just like you can't even see the grave
anymore. Yeah, it's like trash.
So much crash stuff on it.
Yeah. I think I've seen pictures of it.
Now, this is one birthday I have to mention, only because it's significant and how old this being lived.
Yes.
Sunday, July 4th, 1971, Coco the Gorilla was born.
Oh.
The one we talked about when it died and when it signaled for cat and stuff.
Yeah, I love this kitty.
But it was that old. That's crazy.
I think they do live a long time, gorillas.
Also on Monday, July 12th, Christy Yamaguchi was born. But you have something before that, before her birthday.
Oh, my God.
I don't even know who Christy Yamaguchi is. I just wanted to.
You're just such an asshole.
I just like to.
I'm just going to tell a little mini story.
Okay, I'm going to start with July 10th.
but I'm going to give a little backstory to it.
Okay.
And it's not exactly American, but what sometimes weird things happen and we cover them, even if they're not American. Mm-hmm. And so this happened in Jersey, which is a channel island off of northwest coast of France. And it's this little community, little tiny island, small community. English is the main language. And this is the Beast of Jersey is the story that I'm going to tell. So
the Beast of Jersey, not New Jersey.
No,
but Jersey. It's tied back to New Jersey because American Timelines has a New Jersey. So it is American.
There you go. All right, so this started in 1957, actually.
1957?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, that's episode, that's season five.
So in November, there was this 29-year-old nurse waiting for a bus, and she's attacked by this man.
Of course.
Who's wearing a covering over his face.
Covering.
Some kind of covering.
That's all
over
you know,
his
a covering.
And she said he had an Irish accent. She was
an Irish brogue.
She was dragged into a field and she was raped.
Oh, then, that's great, of course, because you love this kind of stuff.
All right. Shh. Okay. Let me tell the story.
Okay, go for it.
Then the following year, she has survived, though.
She survived.
Yeah.
She wasn't killed. No. Okay, he raped her and then he left.
And then the following year in March. In March, a 20-year-old woman was walking home from a bus stop, and she was attacked, and he put a rope around her neck and then dragged her into a field and raped her.
So we're thinking the same guy. Also an Irish brogue?
Yes.
Oh, also another Irish brogue accent. Guy.
Then in July of that year, a 31-year-old woman was attacked. Same way. Everything the same.
Surprised that 31, you'd still want to attack somebody.
Then the same thing happened to a young girl walking home August of 1959 and to a 28-year-old woman attacked in October of 1959.
So the first one was 57?
Yeah.
50, so for 2 years is going on.
Yes, that's right. So detectives saw some recurring themes. They all kind of said he was about early to mid 40s,
mm-hmm.
about 5 feet 6 inches tall, and he had this Irish accent. And they all said that he smelled musty.
Ugh.
Yeah. They said
ghost, like a ghost.
Well, we'll see.
Oh my God, it's a ghost story.
They said that he would put a rope or a cord around. He said he was wearing a rope or a cord around his waist, but he would put a rope around their neck.
I would think back then, most people had ropes for belts.
I guess so.
I had an uncle that always had a rope for a belt, and he cut off his dress shoes and wore black socks. Those were sandals.
Oh my,
he cut the toes off his dress shoes.
You're
Uncle
lying.
Dick Hostetter, yeah.
That's what he
Instead
did.
Of having sandals, he would just cut
dress shoes.
He would wear
off the dress
old
shoe?
Dress shoes, and he would cut the toes off.
You should
off.
Start doing that.
And then have his black, but he'd leave black socks on. They'd be sandals with black
right
socks.
Now.
Yeah, and then he always had a rope for a belt.
What?
Yeah.
And are you from Dog Patch?
He had polio. He also had polio, and he would make, he would fold dollar bills into rings, and he'd go, ha, 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 ha.
Oh, my God.
And we had a dog named Minnie, and he'd go, oh, that's Minnie the Moocher. Oh, look over there. It's Minnie the Moocher. And he just keeps saying Minnie the Moocher over and over again.
That's a very bizarre uncle that you got there.
Also, Uncle Dick. Also, one more thing about Uncle Dick before we move on. My brother Andy had a T-shirt that said, "Inside this shirt is one terrific kid."
Yeah.
And he would say, and Dick, who was a big fat guy himself, would say, "Oh, inside that T-shirt is one terrific like fat kid."
Oh my God!
Yeah.
He say that right to Andy's face.
Right to his. Yeah, he was an old sailor with polio. He was great.
Oh my God!
Dick Hostetter, shout out.
All right. So then in 1960. The attacks, he started attacking indoors. And
indoors.
His
that's a big change.
Increased in frequency.
Probably just wants attention at this point. He just wants to be caught. Because don't they get, what do they call
that
bolder, when they get sloppy?
They get bolder and stuff. So then in the early hours of Valentine's Day, 1960.
Oh, Valentine's Day. Sweet.
A 12-year-old boy was asleep at home. Awoken by a man who had climbed through the bedroom window.
Oh, boy.
And the same thing happened to him.
Oh.
He was taken outside.
That's not a good Valentine's Day for
Then
him.
The following month, a 25-year-old woman walking to a bus stop was offered a lift in a car by a man, and she accepted.
Never accepted.
He said he was a
Irish
doctor,
man.
And he was on the way to pick up his wife.
See, well, that's the thing, is you never accept a ride from an Irish rapist.
Yes.
You just never do that. That's
but
just
she noticed during the ride, she noticed he was wearing a cap and a duffel coat, which I'm I'm not sure what a duffel coat is.
I don't know, but I want one.
And gloves, but couldn't make out his features due to the darkness. Mm. He drove the car into a field and overpowered the woman.
I wonder if it's a...
Then he put her back in the car, and he dropped her off.
He still dropped her off after that?
Yeah, and then he left.
He could be a driver for Lyft or Uber.
Yeah, well...
Successful delivery. I mean... Yeah, you're right. Yeah, our drivers might rape you, but yeah, you will get to
your
destination.
You'll get where you are eventually. So then in March of 1960, a 43-year-old mother, so this is kind of a freaky story. So a 43-year-old mother and her
now we're in the 60s.
And her 14-year-old daughter are sleeping at home, and it's this cottage that's kind of isolated.
Wait, how old is the mother?
43.
Oh, 43, okay.
It's this kind of isolated cottage.
Okay.
And about 12:30 a.m., the telephone starts ringing downstairs. So mm-hmm. the mother goes down to answer it, but when she picks it up, there's just a click and then a dial tone.
Okay.
So she goes back to bed, but then she's awakened about an hour later by a sound downstairs. Mm. So she starts to go downstairs to investigate, but as she reaches the bottom of the staircase, all the lights go out.
Ooh.
So then she hears someone in the living room moving around. So in the dark...
Like jumping jacks or something?
Right.
Sounds like that.
So in the dark, she gets to the telephone to call the police, but the phone had been torn out of the wall.
It's dead, yes. Just like every horror movie.
Then she's confronted by this figure of a man who grabs her and demands money. And he was rough with her, and he threatened to kill her, but he left her immediately when he heard the daughter coming down to investigate.
Huh.
So the woman ran out to go next door to call the police.
With her daughter inside the house still?
Yes.
But the guy was gone.
He ran towards the daughter.
He ran towards the daughter.
Yeah,
left the mother alone. Oh gosh, no.
So she goes. Then when the police get there, they go back and the daughter's still alive, but she had been
raped. Of course.
And
remind me again why you like rapes? Like why you like talking about rapes? Like you just like this?
No,
stuff?
It's just horrifying. So then in April, this 14-year-old girl was awoken in her bedroom to find a man wearing a strange-looking mask, though he took it off when the child screamed and then ran away. And so nothing happened to her.
Oh, good. Somebody didn't get raped, finally.
There you go. So then maybe that's in July of that year, an 8-year-old boy was abducted from his home by a man wearing a raincoat who indecently assaulted him. Then the attacks stopped for the rest of the year but began again in February 1961. There was an attack on a 12-year-old boy, an 11-year-old boy, and an 11-year-old girl.
Jeez, he's just attacking everybody.
So by now, he's been at large for over 3 years, and the Jersey police investigations had gotten no nearer to catching him. So they're feeling a lot of pressure, so they go and get Scotland Yard to help.
Scotland Yard.
And so that's when he's labeled by the press the Beast of Jersey. So
he's able to what?
That's when the press labels him the Beast of Jersey.
Oh, the press labels him the Beast of Jersey.
So
don't want to.
They
be
said that he always struck at night between the hours of 10 p.m. and 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have an intimate knowledge of the island. He was described as being about 40 to 45 years old, about 5 feet 6 inches tall, with a mustache and modern and medium build. He usually had a thigh-length jacket or raincoat, and he had a musty smell. His face was always covered either with a face mask or a scarf covering the lower part of it. And
you're going to say it ends up being the mayor.
He carried a flashlight, and usually when he would go indoors, it was through the bedroom window. And then usually people were blindfolded and tied up. Their hands were tied up, and a rope was placed around their neck, and they were taken to a field and then returned home.
Wonderful.
And he spoke a lot during the attacks.
Oh, really? And that's unusual.
And he mentioned at various times a wife, a dead mother who had died of drink, and that he'd killed before.
So he's just muttering to himself,
yes,
apparently.
Something like that. So every possible man on the whole island is looked at. And any man with a criminal record was questioned and interviewed, but they still haven't found anybody. The intervention of Scotland Yard was good because there was no more attacks for 2 years.
Okay.
But then in April 1963, he returned, attacking a 9-year-old boy. And then another attack in November 1963 on an 11-year-old boy followed. Then in 1964, he got a girl, and then there was in August 1964, another girl. And then in 1966, the police receive a strange letter from an author claiming to be the Beast of Jersey.
An author.
And this is what it says. "My dear sir, I think that it's just the time to tell you that you are just wasting your time, as every time I have done what I always intended to do, and remember it will not stop at this, but I will be fair to you and give you a chance. I have never had much out of this life, but I intend to get everything I can now. I've always wanted to do the perfect crime. I have done this, but this time let the moon shine very brittle in September, because this time it must be perfect, not one but two. I am not a maniac by a long shot, but I like to play with you people. You will hear from me before September, and I will give you all the clues. Just see if you can catch me."
Yeah, so he's getting annoyed that he's doing this just to be caught, and he's not.
He's
being
taunting
caught.
The police and stuff. So, there's more attacks, just like the letter said that he was gonna. They would hear from him again. Now this time there's a new detail. There's these strange long scratches, regularly spaced and always parallel, were found on the victim's torso. Following the attack.
This is still the 60s?
Yeah. Then in August 1970, a 13-year-old boy was awakened at his home by a flashlight in his face. And then the same thing happened to him. He was then returned home, and then he was terrified.
Yeah, because, as you would be.
Because
get raped in a field by an Irish musty smelling guy.
Right, because he said he was going to hurt his mom and dad if he told, so he didn't tell until 8 the next morning.
Yeah.
Then this time the description was a little different. It's supposedly he had black spiky hair and a terrifying mask on.
Huh. Well, there was that mask before, so maybe the mask is back. There was a mask before for a little bit.
And the boy also had the same scratches on his face and body as found in the victim of the 1966 attack.
The parallel scratches.
Mm-hmm. And again, the majority of the island was interviewed, but he wasn't caught. Then, on the night of July 10th, 1971.
Oh, you mean on my birthday when Gloria Steinem holds her address? When Gloria Steinem holds her address to the Women of America speech?
Yes, that's the day.
You know that day?
Mm-hmm. So there's these two cops, and they're out on patrol duties in their car.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled up to a traffic light when this small car shoots past them at high speed, jumping the lights and driving in this erratic way.
Okay.
So they immediately give chase, and during the pursuit, this car sideswiping vehicles, driving on the wrong side of the road, driving down sidewalks
there's
at high speed.
There's a struggle going on.
And finally, the car crashes through a hedge and comes to rest in the middle of a tomato field. The two police officers managed to catch the guy. And it's only when they get him back to the police station just that they did they fully appreciate just how much of a normal arrest this hadn't been.
This hadn't been?
Yes. When the light of the police station, they saw clearly how the man looked and how he was dressed. So
they just arrest a guy. They think it's just a perp, and then they get him back.
Yes. So the man was wearing an old raincoat that smelled musty. And they, right away, when they got him,
it's a musty rapist.
They noticed. The raincoat had 1-inch nails protruding from both the shoulders and the lapels of the coat. And he was wearing cloth bands around each wrist that, again, had protruding 1-inch nails coming out of them.
Weird.
He was wearing old trousers tucked into socks.
Mm-hmm.
Slippers, and wool gloves. When he emptied the pockets of his coat, there was a flashlight with black tape covering the front to provide just a little pinhole of light so he could control and direct the light. There was sash cord, a peaked woolen cap, several empty cigarette packets, rolls of adhesive tape, and a black wig with spiky hair.
All the stuff, a rope belt.
Then they take out the mask. You have to look up this mask.
Okay.
It is terrifying.
Okay, listeners, you can go to Google and you will type in.
Beast of Jersey.
You don't even have to write mask?
No, Beast of Jersey. You could if you wanted, but it'll come up. I mean, it is, to imagine this mask.
Oh, geez, yeah. All right, listeners, all you have to do is type in Beast of Jersey in Google and click images, and it looks messed up. It looks like a mask made of other human
It looks like human
something.
Skin, right?
It's like Chainsaw Massacre.
Can you imagine in the night in your bedroom waking up
to that?
These poor kids.
Yeah, that is messed up stuff.
Is that creepy? So the guy's name is Edward Jean-Louis Pinel. He was a native Jerseyman. He came from an affluent family, 46 years old, was a building contractor, well-known, married with a daughter and two stepchildren.
Had a weirdly shaped mustache.
Yep. His wife, Joan, had run a foster home for children and met Pinel when he helped out as a handyman there. And this is creepy. The children at the foster home knew him as Uncle Ted, who always had sweets and gifts for them, played with them, and dressed up as Santa every year to distribute presents to the children.
Meanwhile, he's raping everyone.
I know. He had married Joan in 1959, but their marriage wasn't a happy one, and he built an annex on his house where they lived, like a little man cave, I guess. Mm. But he kept irregular hours.
She shed.
He would go out fishing for walks at night. Sexually, his wife considered him to be normal, but he had a very low sex drive.
Well, yeah, he did.
Because he was,
He didn't need, he's got plenty of it from all the children in the world.
So here's, when questioned, this is what he says, why he's got all this stuff in his pockets.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he was on his way to an orgy, and he had borrowed the car to get there to avoid anyone seeing him and identifying him on the way there. He said the nails in his clothing were as a defense against anyone using martial arts to attack him.
Well, that's why I wear nails in my clothes, because Chuck Norris comes by.
He refused to say anything about the mask and wig, but they saw that he had adhesive tape marks on his face that matched tape inside the mask.
Mm.
So he had clearly worn it at some point that night. So he was locked up, and when they went to his house, his bedroom was they found a locked secret room that he had built.
Oh, no, a rape room.
It smelled musty, and inside there was several items of old clothing, homemade wigs and hats, and false eyebrows. Like, why would you have false eyebrows?
Oh, no. I mean, obviously, there's nothing he can do that's normal at this point.
There was a camera hanging on a hook and several photographs of various houses. There was also several items of black magic paraphernalia, a homemade altar, and a sizable library about the occult and black magic rituals. And there was a curved sword hanging on the wall. So he was eventually charged on 13 counts, including rape, indecent assault, and sodomy against six victims, with all but one being a minor. His trial in November 1971 revealed an obsession with black magic. He never explained what motivated him to go out and commit the terrifying and savage attacks that he did. When questioned about anything, he gave evasive and babbling answers and descended into talks of curses, covens, hints of black magic.
She understands it's the crazy ninjas. It's the magic ninja. It's the evil. It's what? Doug Henning.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I can't do an Irish accent, though.
No, you can't.
When Irish eyes are smiling, give me lucky charms.
Okay. Black so magic, then on November 29th, 1971... it just took 38 minutes for a guilty verdict to be reached against Pinel.
That's it, huh? 38 minutes, yeah, that guy's... Because he probably showed up to the court with that mask on. Yeah, that guy's guilty. Oh, my God.
Well, they had to see the mask in the trial.
Oh, yeah, that's disgusting. Yeah, look that up, everyone, and try not to vomit at work.
Well, and just that's the big reason I picked it, because
it's so crazy. It's so nightmarish. Messed up, yeah.
Just to think about having that, like... It's bad enough to have a strange man in your room at night, but to have him dress up like Michael Myers from Halloween.
Even worse, though.
Oh, like 10 times worse. Like Leatherface or something.
It's terrible. That's a terrible picture, and I do not enjoy it.
No.
I did not enjoy it.
The story of the Beast of Jersey.
Who'd have known the highlight of this episode was going to be birthdays?
Oh, my God. You're such an a-hole.
Good Lord. I mean, ugh, gross.
Well, that's what you get.
To cleanse the palate. Corey Feldman was also born
time. No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was. He was born in July of 1971.
Oh, he's a year older than me.
Yeah, he was born during the whole murder. So, yes, we had to listen to all that crap. But Corey Feldman, everyone. Yep. Happy birthday to Corey Feldman.
That's right.
July, I don't know, 13th, we'll say.
So this is the end of this episode.
Yeah, I think that'll be about it for this episode. Sorry, we've... made you sick to your stomach, but we're both, you may be able to tell in our voices, but we're both sick right now, kind of.
Yeah.
Amy's got some kind of infection.
Syphilis, it's called.
Syphilis. Oh, she's got a lot of scabs. And I have a baby. ruminoids. I have hemorrhoids.
Hemorrhoids.
My hemorrhoids.
What are ruminoids?
I was.
You made that up.
Maybe there's something. My hemorrhoids. I have reverse hemorrhoids. They're inside my body, and they've gone all the way up from the bottom to my throat. So I have a little sore throat.
Really gross.
Yeah. Inner hemorrhoids.
They're called inner.
I think they're called inner hemorrhoids, and they go all the way from my rectum all the way up to my.
Your throat.
My Abdullah. Butcher the Abdullah Ablagata.
All right.
And so my throat's so kind of, and I got a cough. I'm weird.
You're such a weirdo.
No, I think I'm a regular person. I'm just a regular, like, I represent the average Joe.
That's
and I
true.
Think that's when people are listening to this. They're like, oh, it's funny. I'm glad this guy's on here because he's saying all the things that I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people get.
So please rate, review, subscribe.
Yeah, yes, you are listening to History for Jerks. That's who we are. Amy and I together, we are History for Jerks, and we appreciate you. So see us, check us out at History for Jerks. Please give us 5 stars on the iTunes.
Yeah.
It takes a minute to rate us. I know if you listen to iTunes, even if you don't listen to iTunes, just make it. Just it takes a few minutes. Just get online, make an Apple name, you know, whatever you want to be, Kevin Costner, whatever you want to name it, and just review us. And then you never have to go back to iTunes again. You never have to use it again.
Yeah, if you don't want to. That's right.
And you can do it on Stitcher or. We're on Spotify.
Yeah.
We're on Podbean, I think. We're on, what else is the Google's got its own podcast thing now, which is great. I need to start using that.
All right.
CastBox, everything else. But anyway, you guys are great looking. I mean, seriously, we have the best looking listeners.
Yes,
have you noticed?
True. I mean, do.
Look at this. Look at Gary.
That's right.
Gary, we see you. I know you're probably stopping right now on the street. As you're listening to this with your headphones, you're like, oh, my God, how can they see me? I am great looking.
Yep.
Gary, take your pants off.
All right. It's time to get out of here.
Time to get out of here. Speaking of Chuck Berry.
What?
He's going to be mentioned in the next
season. He is.
Maybe next season. Yeah. In 72.
All right. Well.
Anyway, Chuck Berry. Speaking of pants off, Chuck Berry. Because you're
going to the
bathroom.
All that stuff.
Lady
that's
stuff.
Right.
So. St. Louis, Chuck Berry, get out of here. Chuck Berry, get out of the ladies' room, man.
Get out.
Matt Truman.
Take it away.
Rock it out, brother. Matt Truman, you go through everybody.
American Timelines is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. For more information, go to queencitypodcastnetwork.com.